Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM. This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by General Steel.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. President Biden shows up in Ukraine and while standing next to Ukraine's president, announces an additional $500 million in U.S. assistance.
Freedom is priceless. It's worth fighting for as long as it takes.
CBS's Nancy Cordes has more on the unannounced trip.
Instead of his usual 747, they put the president on a smaller 757, changing the call sign from Air Force One to Special Air Mission 60. The plane took off from Joint Base Andrews outside D.C. at 4:15 Sunday morning, stopping briefly in Germany to refuel before turning off its transponder and flying to a Polish airbase near the Ukrainian border. As the president and a tiny group of aides made their way into Ukraine on a heavily guarded 8-car train, U.S. surveillance flights kept watch from Polish airspace.
The president meets with Poland's president tomorrow and other NATO leaders on Wednesday. Los Angeles County Sheriff Robert Luna says a man arrested in the weekend killing of a Catholic auxiliary bishop is Carlos Medina of Torrance, California.
Medina is the husband of Bishop O'Connell's housekeeper, who has previously done work at the bishop's residence.
Students at Michigan State University returned to classes today after a gunman opened fire on the campus last week, killing three people and wounding five others. MSU student Gabrielle Bain.
I don't think this is something you get over. I just, you know, it's, you got to take it day by day.
In South Suburban Dayton, Ohio, an explosion and fire at a metal manufacturing plant sent more than a dozen people to hospitals, with at least two of them in critical condition, according to authorities. This man was in Oakwood when it happened.
A piece of rock shot like in the middle of the warehouse, and it was a nice chunk. It's just molten lava.
No word on a cause. A new report from UCLA's law school finds that early in the pandemic, thousands more people died of COVID in jails and prisons than initially thought. In 2020, nearly 6,200 people died in U.S. prisons, an increase of nearly 50% from the year before.
Prisons served as incubators for the virus that then spread back out into the community.
Aaron Littman is with the UCLA Law Behind Bars Data Project and says those behind bars simply did not get the care they needed.
There are people who were sentenced to a term of years in prison, but not to death, and didn't deserve to be neglected and left to die.
The Justice Department collected and analyzed data about federal and state prison deaths to help track problems, but it stopped in 2019 because of bureaucratic changes within the department.
That's CBS's Matt Piper reporting. This is CBS News.
Business owners, General Steel can help save you thousands by owning your own custom-designed buildings. Call 888-98-STEEL or visit generalsteel.com.
You wash your hands, you brush your teeth, but how do you clean your nose? With Navage. Navage uses powered suction to pull saline in one nostril, around the back of the nose, and out the other nostril, flushing out allergens, mucus, and germs. And it's why cleaning your nose, the body's air filter, is the next evolution in daily personal hygiene. Navage helps you breathe better, sleep deeper, and snore less, but the biggest payoff is improved health. At Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, Rite Aid, Target, and online. Navage, N-A-V-A-G-E. Clean nose, healthy life.
Gah, I'm so stressed. It's a brand new year and our business is busier than ever.
Ooma.
What is that? Meditation?
I'm recommending the Ooma cloud phone system with auto attendant and more than 35 features.
Ooma?
Yep. Switching to Ooma is a cinch. Starts at $19.95 per month per user, plus taxes and fees.
Ooma.
Now you're feeling it. Visit Ooma.com. That's OOMA.com to learn more. Ooma. Smart communications for the smarter business.
President's Day means
pride.
Left corner, three in the way. Got it.
Excellence.
Yes, it counts. And a foul.
Commitment.
Drops the hammer. Thank you and good night.
For Badgers, they're not just words. They're words to live by.
It's over. Let's have a party, Badger Nation.
This is your radio home for the Badgers.
Catch all the Badgers men's basketball action in the Big Ten this year right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
Have you been trying to figure out how to finance your education? Let's be honest. The cost of college these days is staggering. If you have strong academic and leadership skills, you may be eligible for a scholarship from the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks. Every year, the Elks National Foundation awards more than $3.3 million in scholarships that range from 1 to 4 years. So pick up an application today at your guidance counselor's office or your local Elks Lodge. To find the lodge nearest you, log on to elks.org. High school seniors, would you like to avoid student loans? Parents, would you like to give your child a better future without mortgaging your own? Well, a $60,000 ELK scholarship may just be your ticket to the college of your choice. Each year, the ELKs National Foundation and your local ELKs Lodge provides millions of dollars in college scholarships to high school seniors. If you're interested in learning more about the ELKs scholarship opportunities, visit our website at elks.org. ELKs care, ELKs share.
A message from your Wisconsin Rapids Elks Club, number 693.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. A winter storm watch begins at 3 p.m. Wednesday and continues until 6 p.m. Thursday night. A winter weather advisory begins at 6 p.m. tomorrow evening and continues until 9 a.m. Wednesday. Cloudy tonight with a chance of flurries. Lows around 16. Winds out of the west 15 to 20 miles per hour. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 34.
News, talk, and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
I'm still fixated on this Marjorie Trainwreck Green tweet of calling for a national divorce. And again, immediately I came out and said, look, you know, the reality is there should be a conversation on how red states are welfare states, taking more money from the federal government than blue states do. There's a huge, massive redistribution of wealth. Maybe we should be talking about that. And immediately I got people, well, you wouldn't eat, and all this, all kinds of craziness. Now, I'm not advocating for civil war, which is kind of what Marjorie Three names. At least I see that as it's kind of what she's doing by the calling, we need to be separated by red states and blue states. No, we just need to get rid of crazy people. And do you remember when crazy people used to go, you can love it or leave it? Well, you know, Marjorie, gather your sheeple and get the flock out. Pretty simple. Here to share some thoughts on, is there a possibility of a national divorce? What the hell is that? I've asked our good friend Carolyn Fiddler to come talk with us. Carolyn is the political editorial director over at Courier Newsroom, couriernewsroom.com, the website. Carolyn, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
So political divorce, a divorce. We're a national divorce. We're gonna split up neighborhoods. We're gonna do some creative drawing to get red states and blue states again pitting us against each other. Is that possible?
I mean, we did try it once. It didn't work out so well. And I think enough people actually studied legit history before they're before the current wave of Republican efforts to sort of erase history teaching from our schools. I don't know if people remember that that was a bad thing that did not work out very well, and we should not do that again. We are a united set of states. It's kind of our thing.
Yeah, but you still got those people, the losers, who they're still a little chafe. That war of northern aggression, Carolyn. They want part. They want a rematch.
No one wants that. And I don't think it'll work out too well for them, honestly.
No, I don't think it worked out for us at all. And just to have a, this is the thing that gets me, to have a national figure like her. Look, for some idiot to spew this on Twitter or social media is one thing. But to have someone with the platform and the power of a sitting congresswoman, this is dangerous talk, because this filters down to the mouth breathers and the folks sitting on their toilets with their mouth open doing their research by watching YouTube videos of this moron saying, we need a national divorce. That filters
and it normalizes
down.
It's terrifying. We can't normalize this kind of conversation. Like it's a free country for the time being. People are allowed to say what they want, but it does normalize this kind of extremist talk. And that is absolutely very scary.
And what I say it does is it provides cover for all the really ugly stuff that's happening in the states.
Exactly.
I look at Iowa and I keep going, Iowa, how did you get so crazy? When we did our Working Class Heroes tour, we went all the way all around Iowa. I think we traveled to all four corners and everywhere in between. And I remember J.D. Schulten, who is now a state representative, saying, you know, it was talk radio that radicalized and cable news that turned Iowa from a solid, moderate, democratic, working class state to a bunch of raving lunatics, right-wing lunatics. And I look at the legislation that's being proposed in their house. It's insane.
It is. It really is.
This idea that we're going to make child labor great again by letting 13-year-olds clean the head splitters on the kill floor of the meatpacking plant is literally insane.
It is. It is. I mean, I feel like that's probably a good way to create a whole generation of vegetarians, but also it is objectively terrible and should not happen. So, but actually, weirdly, in Virginia, a bill recently got killed. They were a member was trying to have it so if you were working in the workforce under 18, you get paid like $3 less an hour than someone 18
or older. This crap too. Yeah,
it's wild.
Like training wages, as if minimum wage isn't low enough already.
My God, yes.
We need training wages. But then again, listen, you know, I remember Ron Paul running on the platform that people should make $1 an hour. If you're willing to work for it, they should be allowed to pay it. If you're desperate enough, and this is why I keep saying, they're trying to push us back to the Lochner era, where if you're hungry enough and desperate enough to work for poverty wages in deplorable conditions, it's your liberty, Carolyn. It's your freedom.
You know, I like the freedom to, like, not starve and be able to have a roof over my head. That feels like freedom as well.
No, and this is the weird part of where we are in this country, where you have these voices like Marjorie Three Names or Lauren Boebert, who tweeted out today, what do Target, Capital One, Amazon, Nike, and Intel all have in common? Now, she said they ditched their inclusion and diversity and equity programs because they need more profit. I'm like, they pay lower taxes than their workers. That's what we should be talking about, not this nonsense that, again, to divide and pit us against each other. They're literally robbing us blind.
Yeah, that's exactly what they want to do. Like, look at what's happening over here, so you don't pay attention to my hand in your pocket. And this has been, I mean, the sad thing is this has been a long time coming. Like, these people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Boebert started popping up in legislatures in the early teens, and they, you know, trickled up through the system, state legislatures, get positions of power in your caucus, and then you run for, say, Congress, and it was really only kind of a matter of time until we got here, unfortunately, and here we are.
No, I mean, the thing is look, you've always had a lunatic here or there. You always had the guy who was screaming on the street corner, standing on the soapbox, you know, screaming, you know, by himself. The problem is these people have multiplied. They've organized, and they're not just one or two fringe characters. They've literally... Well, look what they did to the speaker, McCarthy, and going through that debacle. And look what they're bringing legislatively in states across this country. Again, I go back to this idea, Iowa, what the blank are you doing? We're going to make child labor great again. We're gutting education. Ohio, for instance, you know, they just proposed the Republicans' first legislation, cut taxes on the rich and property taxes and cut $1.2 billion from education. Really?
Yeah. They wanted to destroy public education since time out of mind, it feels like, but they're actually closer to doing it now than they ever have been before, and that is incredibly scary.
Now, you guys at Courier Newsroom spend an awful lot of time in states, and a lot of them that we've got affiliates in, Wisconsin, and other places, you know, that are running bad legislation. You know, what's the most, you know, right now, what should we be paying attention to? What's the most egregious thing that's going on right now?
Whew. That is actually a tough question, just because there's so much to choose from. I think the concerted effort, I think two things come instantly to mind to me out of the, you know, myriad pieces of bad legislation moving out there. But the anti-LGBTQ bills, a lot of it is centered around transgender students, but it's, you know, trickling all the way up and down the age ranges, really. They're doing the divide and conquer in that way, like pitting just human beings against each other. Like, look at this scary person who doesn't look like you and doesn't think like you. You should be afraid of them. They're a monster. Like, that's what they're doing. So we can't. So it's harder to come together and fight back against them. And also the pervasive, ongoing, escalating effort to just ruin education, specifically like history education in schools. So
yeah, you look at Florida.
Know that we've been here before and we don't want to go back. It was bad. It is bad. Racism is bad. It's not a controversial concept, but they don't want it being taught in schools.
Well, it'll make us feel bad. Well, you know, our widow feelings will be hurt. Remember when they were calling everybody snowflakes?
Like, who's a snowflake now? Like, I'm fine. Like, come on.
Yeah, no, look, back in 2015, we on the program did a multi-state tour of southern states where wherever they treated black people poorly, they've built a museum. There's a new institute or, the lunch counter in Greensboro, North Carolina. It's the Woolworths Institute. I forget what it's actually called. But you could go to the actual Woolworth counter where the A&T 4 were, treated horribly. And now it's a museum. And there's tourism around it going, look how bad we were. That to me is kind of an education thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe if we couch this in different terms, maybe if we stop calling it education and called it tourism. Maybe we could then teach the next generation a little bit. Maybe they could profit from our kids learning from something. Maybe that's the way forward.
They're already trying to do that. They're trying to destroy public education and give it all to private schools and charter schools. And so they're not taking their foot off the gas pedal in any respect when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah.
It's really hard to choose just two of the worst things. So.
No, it's frightening on a whole bunch of levels. But back to the trans thing. I don't proclaim to have the right answer or any answer. I don't know how I would react, but I do know one thing without question. A government of radical religious zealots, probably not the group I want making a choice for my child. I'm just kind of throwing that out there.
That's for sure. And these people just want to exist. They just want to like live a life as themselves. And like, why can't you just like leave people alone and let people do that? Like, why is that suddenly so difficult? I remember, we remember back when, Republicans were the party of smaller government.
Remember that? It's hard. It's hard to go back that far. Less intrusive government, get big government out of our lives. And yet every time I turn around, they're proposing something to put themselves in the most intimate portions of our lives.
Yeah.
And again, I want government doing things. I want them regulating trains, for instance. I would like them to regulate health and safety, for instance. I would like them to make sure that dust levels are such that they don't explode manufacturing facilities. I would like them to do those, make sure the air and the water and the food. I don't want them in my bedroom. I don't want them in my kid's bedroom. I think that's a fair balance. No?
I completely agree. Like whatever happened and just like a little bit of privacy for everybody. Just, that person doing their thing doesn't affect you. So just leave them the hell alone. Why is that suddenly so hard?
No, it's crazy. Now, President's Day, obviously you're in the, what do they call Virginia? The mother of
the
presidents.
The mother of presidents.
Something?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of a cheat. Kind of a cheat. Because you had three of the first four. So you had kind of a huge head start, no?
Right, but there were other colonies at the time too, and other like first, early states. Like it just,
yep.
It didn't have to just be people from Virginia. Like
but nobody wanted to drive that far. There were no superhighways back then.
But the capital wasn't even in D.C. until a couple of like at least two of those first three were gone. So like they still had to commute. Would have been easier if they'd been from New York, probably,
or Philadelphia.
Yes.
So it is that. But, this is one of these things where I'm looking at Marjorie Three Names and her declaration of a national divorce while our commander-in-chief, our president, is in Kiev in a war-torn area on the national stage. It seems it doesn't seem very patriotic. It doesn't seem very America first. It doesn't seem very rhetoric based on their side. And also, it does kind of that bumper sticker I see every conservative have plastered on the back of their car. Which is, what happened to love it or leave it?
Yeah, rhetoric changes, attitudes haven't changed. They just kind of shift perspective a little bit. Like they're saying the same thing in a different way.
So now we talk about all the horrible, and you're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Carolyn Fidler. Carol's the political editorial director over at Courier Newsroom, couriernewsroom.com, the website. Highly suggest taking a look at it. They've got publications all over the country. Your state, probably going to be one of them, Wisconsin, here in Pennsylvania, Iowa, other states. Make sure that you check them out. All right there, couriernewsroom.com. So, but we've been talking about all the horrible. There's got to be some good stuff going on, no? Something? Anything? We named a post office after someone decent. There's got to be some victory. There's got to be some winning somewhere, no?
Well, Virginia is about to send its first black woman to Congress. So that would be very exciting for Virginians.
As long as we can get somebody who's not crazy, I'm good with that.
Jennifer McClellan, she's currently a state senator. She is going to be an amazing member of Congress. Like, I've known her since even before she was in the legislature, because I'm an old person now. I remember she was a lobbyist, and she's an incredible human being and incredible lawmaker. And she's going to, I think, she's going to be a person to watch, certainly on the national stage.
No, that's good. I mean, that's something positive, right? Now, how do we build on that? How do we take that and go, maybe we get some less crazy people in other places?
Well, you know, Virginia is one of the few states with state legislative elections this year. And so hopefully Democrats in Virginia can flip that House back to a Democratic majority and keep and expand their majority in the state Senate. And instead of doing things like they've been doing all year this year, which is just Democrats blocking terrible Republican bills come out of the House and Republicans killing good Democratic legislation that comes out of the Senate. So we end up with a bit of a status quo. But hopefully we can move back to actually making progress, like, you know, raising the minimum wage in Virginia finally after all those years, protecting abortion, working to repeal the unconstitutional ban on same-sex marriage in the state constitution, things like that, like little things.
Little tiny things.
Like basic rights.
Yeah, you know, like basic rights. For instance, you know, I'm looking at Michigan, and I'm guardedly optimistic about Michigan. You know, there's some really good things that potentially are going to happen, I'm hoping. I think their governor's not crazy. I think their legislature's got their head on the right path. If we can get, you know, that whole no rights at work thing repealed, mm-hmm. and give people the right to collectively bargain and help strengthen unions to help families do better, I think that's a good start. Democrats actually doing something positive for working people. What could be bad with that?
I mean, for obvious reasons, like gun safety legislation has rocketed to the top of the priority list in Michigan, but. Their next priority really should be strengthening workers' rights there, because not only is that just good for your average human being, but in a more utilitarian sense, it actually also helps build progressive and democratic power in states. Not having right to work laws, having strong union structures is helpful to the democratic infrastructure, frankly. So I hope they are not so short-sighted that they don't prioritize that appropriately.
No, there's so much going on. There's so much bad, and it's easy to go, you know what? I'm just going to put my head in the sand and run away. Because again, I look at Iowa. Oh my God! Yeah. I look at Texas right now, Florida. You know, they're trying to move legislation to shield trucking companies from being sued, for big claims. You start going, you know, what's going on here?
I think things are going to get worse before they get better, unfortunately. I do. Maybe I'm a Pollyanna. I do think they'll get better. Politics is a little cyclical that way. But I worry that they're going to get worse before they do.
Got to ask you about the train.
It's going to actually hurt a lot of real human beings. So, and also for anyone watching, this is Nebula. She is a very progressive cat.
There you go. Last question I've got for you. The train. I got to get some thoughts on the train. Where are you on the response to... by the administration to the train? I know you got the Republicans who finally figured out there was a train wreck. We'd been talking about it for, you know, like over a week. And then one day Republicans go, oh, train wreck, a way to attack Pete Buttigieg and Biden. Wow. Now it's all we hear about.
Yeah.
Did you hear the Chinese balloon might not be a Chinese balloon? It might be an American spy balloon. This is what's coming out of the hillbilly Scientologists over at Q. Yeah. Fun.
Oh, gosh. Wow. I mean, Republicans will look for, I mean, they see that Buttigieg is a rising star in the party. He's definitely not anywhere near done with his political career. And he's smart. And I think they're afraid of him. So they're trying to, you know, defang him. And obviously, Republicans don't want Joe Biden to get reelected. So let's take every opportunity to hammer him as well. It's not, they don't care about the people in Ohio. They don't care about people who live in that town or anywhere around it. They don't care about the environment. They just care about power. And that's what Republicans do so consistently better than Democrats.
Sadly, you are correct. CareerNewsroom.com, the website. Carolyn Fidler, political editorial director. Appreciate the time. As always, such fun talking with you.
Likewise. Thanks for having me on.
Good stuff. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I think it's interesting that Carolyn brought up the transgender issue because, you know, we've been hearing a lot of things about bathrooms. Lots about bathrooms. There's going to be someone going to the bathroom. Didn't hear much about this story. Evidently, one of the resource officers at a Texas grade school evidently left their handgun in the third bathroom stall. Because of course, you know, that's what you want laying around for third graders to find in the bathroom. And I'm like, what are you doing in the bathroom stall where the kids go? I mean, that was my question. Why is the resource officer even in there? How did you drop the gun in the third stall when there should be staff restrooms? This isn't every elementary school I've ever been in. You've got restrooms for the adult folk, and then you got those really low to the ground things that there's no way you're getting down to. Who's going in there? But evidently, back in January, a third grader at this elementary school in Rising Star, Texas, found the gun in the bathroom stall. Yeah. There you go. Also, another bit of fun and entertainment. Thank you. Thanks to Alabama. I don't know if you saw this story over the weekend. This guy, his name is Anthony Mitchell. Anthony Mitchell was having a kind of a mental moment, and his family called the police for an intervention to try and you know a welfare check, if you will. And well, they arrested him because I guess he threw some shots into the air, had the gun. So they arrested him. Back early January, and on January 26th, he died in jail. His body temperature, they did a rectal body temperature, 72 degrees. So what does that mean? That means they took this poor guy, and for over 2 weeks, they put him in a freezer. Because I don't know how you get a body temperature down to 72 degrees. And that's probably after a couple hours of being transported and moved around to the hospital. This, again, is another one of these moments where you've got the FBI now, I guess, is involved. You've got a lawsuit. It's the only way we heard about this. But it makes you go, what is it with these cops? Again, I support the police when they're not wrong. Here, wrong. It's like that story from Arkansas where they, on a wellness check, they took this guy and they starved him to death in the jail cell. It was a 200 and some pound guy when they laid him on the morgue table, 90 pounds. Stop and think about that. But again, these are good God fearing Christian states. We'll be right back.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a minute, Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a minute, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. The first time I heard about biomarker testing was actually my husband. He just started researching about lung cancer.
And I found out about biomarker testing, and I'm like, why not? Let's try it.
I'm Dr. Jorge Gomez, thoracic medical oncologist at the Mount Sinai Hospital. Comprehensive biomarker testing is looking for either substances in the blood or mutations in some of the genes of the cancer cells that can help us identify special types of lung cancer that can be treated with what we call targeted therapies.
Letting my children know brought all of us a sense of hope. To give them hope that mom is going to be around to see you grow up. And I promised them that.
Ask your doctor about how comprehensive biomarker testing before treatment may help you and your doctor decide on the best treatment for you. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
Let's face it, life looks a little different. During these times, we're doing our best to keep our minds and bodies strong. And getting a flu shot helps us stay healthy. So we don't miss out on what matters, like having game night at home. Yeah, can't do that while sick with the flu. Now imagine family movie night that your daughter can't live without. Well, that's ruined. And don't forget your uncle's socially distanced cookout. See? That's why it's important to be at our strongest. Every year, millions of people in the U.S. get the flu. Especially now, no one has time to miss out on moments that matter. So get your flu shot. Find out more at getmyflushot.org. Brought to you by the AMA, CDC, and the Ad Council.
Hey, what's up, y'all? I'm Kelly Clarkson, and as the daughter of a school teacher, I know just how important education is. No matter how old you are or your situation, continuing to learn will enrich your life and help remove barriers you didn't even know were there. So much opportunity, y'all. Whether it's a foreign language, history, or a different way to look at things, take some time each day to learn something new. This message is courtesy of the United States Air Force.
If you've been listening, you know you can get your free credit report at annualcreditreport.com. But how do you use it? Paying attention to key pieces of information on the report, including your personal information, open credit accounts, and credit inquiries, can help you not only understand your credit standing and catch any errors, but regularly checking your credit report may also help you identify potential fraud or identity theft. Everyone is entitled to a free credit report from each of the three main credit bureaus once every 12 months. Yet only one in three Wisconsin adults actually obtain the report each year. An easy way to remember to check your report is to simply mark your calendar. Picking dates like February 2nd or 2-2 make it even easier to remember. Go to annualcreditreport.com to get started with your free credit report, and don't forget to keep listening for more tips. This message has been brought to you by the United Way of Southwood and Adams County's Financial Stability Coalition.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. A winter storm watch begins at 3 p.m. Wednesday and continues until 6 p.m. Thursday night. A winter weather advisory begins at 6 p.m. tomorrow evening and continues until 9 a.m. Wednesday. Cloudy tonight with a chance of flurries. Lows around 16. Winds out of the west 15 to 20 miles per hour. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 34.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
Host Wisconsin with Kristen Bry, weekdays 11 to 2 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Life had a remote control. You could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Be cut, arguing that hospitals must have staffing flexibility. In other words, cut nurses, raise profits.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Here's an interesting story. Evidently, Ron DeSantis is going to not show up to CPAC. I find that incredible. He is not going to show up to the annual Conservative Political Action Conference, which I have, you know, affectionately dubbed as Crazy PAC, because they've really gone off the rails. And maybe this is him, you know, going, you know, this is Trump's crowd. We're gonna stay away from the crazy people, not put myself in a position where I'm going to look bad, because not his crowd. But I do find it interesting that maybe this is the kind of splitting of the faithful. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you make of DeSantis skipping CPAC?
Well, DeSantis recently was starting to be hit for focusing, quote, too much on the woke. And that was just, I think, probably about the last week. Also, he may try to be centric, although he has a primary to get through. So, you know, maybe he's just trying to have the effect. I doubt it's because he had a prior commitment.
Oh, no, there's no way. I mean, that's, you know, that's like the who's who of the crazy now.
Maybe that's partial why he is not doing it at this point in time.
Yeah. I can't wait for Crazy PAC this time. Maybe they'll come up with another one of those golden Trump dolls that they rolled out the last.
Oh yeah, I remember that. That
years ago.
Bizarre.
I want to get your thoughts on this tweet by Marjorie Taylor Greene on this national divorce thing. It just seems to me on President's Day, while the president's in Ukraine, on a national stage as commander in chief, is this the right time for something like this? And calling for treason, I mean, calling for a civil war? Does this seem kind of like the wrong thing to be doing? I just want to get your thoughts.
Well, it was revealed the other day. You know, she went bombastic at the very end of a briefing, private briefing, on the balloon, and she was going crazy with it. And then she now, of course, suggests splitting up the U.S. by red and blue states. She called it a national divorce for people who are sick of Democrats, quote, traitorous policies in a tweet. She gets this attention. I mean, nobody in their right mind would even make this as a sitting office holder, make this suggestion, to do this. I mean, it seriously, even though she's just completely out of her mind, but it goes back to referencing of something that was a reality in this country of two Americas and how many people died. I can't imagine, how people that she represents let her get away with this, because there are so many issues out there that have to be affecting those people. This is just pure political, not craziness, political entertainment on top of it.
Yeah. No, but for me, it's like, I get that this, it's any other day you throw this out, but on President's Day, while the president's in Ukraine, it just seemed like for maximum outrage, maximum trolling, this is where she went.
Well, remember, too, Rick, in December of 2021, she tweeted about the same type of idea, but also suggested that if people move from, this is not a split yet, but if people move from blue to red states, they should be barred for voting for a period of time. So, you know, I mean, she's, you know, mask mandates compared to the Holocaust, all the conspiracy theories of QAnon, and again, you know, she just is not in her right mind with the right faculties, but, you know, what a waste of an elected office.
But she's getting more and more attention, though. I mean, she's rising in influence,
well,
and that's the scary
part.
Sure,
that's why she does it. They said the other day at the end of the hearing they knew she would do something because she wants her time, yelling liar with the president. You know, she wants her time in the sun, and it's just, I think it's just sad, and what a waste, again, of her office to do things that could help people. You know, if once in a while somebody makes a bizarre statement, that happens all over the place. This is planned, it's methodical, it's constant, and it's really pathetic. Maybe if they don't ever print anything she says again, it might cure her.
No,
well,
I mean, the problem
won't cure her. Maybe it'll stop her a bit.
Yeah, the moneyed interests, you know, the fact that this generates revenue and, you know, there's all this buzz around it, it's sadly never going to stop. That's
right.
That's the weird thing in all of this.
Right. Yeah, it's sad.
Now, I did want to get your thoughts on the president going to Ukraine today. Good move, bad mood, especially with, you know, what's going on here at home with the East Palestine situation. Your thoughts?
Oh, it's a good move. I care about, East Palestine also. I care about, you know, what happens there. It's down in our neck of the woods, but there are all kinds of things that, you know, happen in America, and those situations have to be addressed. But the job is a multitasking job, and, you know, he had some things also scheduled. But it's a big deal. It's a good thing to do because it does several things. One, it shows the Russians that, you know, we are serious to do what he did, to go into an active war zone, which is the presidents have went into war zones by surprise visits. This is the first time a president has went into a war zone without us having our troops in that war zone. So they had to rely totally on the, on the Ukrainians. Number two, again, it shows, you know, our resolve to help. But also for our NATO partners, I think this is also a big deal. I noticed a few of the Republicans had criticism, but it was a few. A lot of them didn't criticize him. And again, they based it on, well, he goes to their border, but he doesn't come to our border and do something. You know, it's those arguments were so weak that they only had a couple of arguments like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's totally appropriate what he did.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been talking to people all day about, you know, why am I supporting this? Because, you know, for the most part, you know, I've had people say, I remember you were anti-war. I go, I am anti-war, when you can avoid it. This is a situation where Russia invaded a sovereign nation. And they, from all reports, they're planning on moving on. And if Ukraine loses, I fear they go to Poland and we end up involved in this because NATO is not going to allow them to invade a NATO country.
Right, and we're vested in this, and the majority of the citizenry supports it, and also a majority of the Congress supports it. So it's not like he went out on his own and did something. And again, you know, I don't like the wars, especially the one that, you know, we were tricked into supporting, and I don't like it, but this one is not looking for, we're not looking for weapons of mass destruction in Ukraine. You know, the weapon of mass destruction is Putin.
Yeah. No, it's that simple to me. And I don't know. I also want to get you're in Ohio now. Any word on the train derailment? I know your family's in the area where this has happened. Any recent news? Are any family in the zip code that's going to be getting $1,000 from Alan Shaw?
No family up there. I mean, I know people, you know, all over the area. I used to represent a slice of Columbiana County. Jim Traficant had the rest of it. So there's still a lot of, you know, people wanting the transparency involved with the issue to know, you know, the testing is continuing to go on. As far as the $1,000, I would surely hope that isn't used to say that, you know, Norfolk and Southern doesn't have liability. I would surely hope that is not used somehow by them to say they don't have liability. I just think that they've got to look at exactly what happened, how it happened, why it happened, how to prevent it, look at the specialty brakes, look at everything involved in the issue, because, you know, there's other portions of railroads across this country that the same type of thing could happen. So the more information they get, I think the better off they are. Also, questions to be answered of why those were not labeled in the first place as dangerous, toxic chemicals.
No, absolutely. But after we talked the last time, you know, you had brought up a couple of questions. You know, why wasn't there a website? Why isn't there stuff? And I actually went, you know, that night I went and hunted it down. And there is a website. There is a phone number to call. They've had it set up almost from, you know, like a couple of days afterwards. You know, 215-814-2400 is the phone number for the EPA Region 5. They also have response.epa.gov East Palestine Train Derailment as their website, which is a mouthful. But I assume if you go to the response.epa.gov, it'll be right there. But, you know, there are these resources out there. It's just that it wasn't being promoted, and I didn't know it was out there.
I didn't know either. I mean, I had, at the time, no idea. When I sent a message to, you know, some people in the governor's office suggesting a website, I didn't know that there was a website at that time. I mean, the information's been so sketchy, and people were just calling all over the place, you know, to different water authorities that had no more information. In fact, the water authority local with my daughter had answered, you know, we don't know. That's the state, not us.
We don't know. Leave us alone. And it is, but this is the EPA who has one, and I got to assume that the state might have one as well. So I got to think that, you know, they just done a really terrible job of getting that out.
Right.
Because you brought it up, and I'm like, I can't imagine that they wouldn't have thrown up a website. Any idiot can do that.
Well, you know, they can put out amber alerts in areas to phones. You know, for example, your phone goes off if it's within a certain area. I would assume they have capabilities to put out, you know, here's a website information, and you touch a button and it can go across the phone systems for people in the area. I would assume. That didn't happen, but I would think they could do that, or should be able to.
Yeah, I mean, they've got everything else. Why not be able to do something like
right.
that? Or at least target in a way. I mean, you got Google Ads. I mean, there's got to be a way to target this in this day of instant technology. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but yeah, there is something that got there. And finally, I wanted to get your thoughts on the horrible news I got yesterday. I got it yesterday. I'm not sure when it actually came out, but... you know, President Carter is, I guess, entered hospice. You know, I guess they moved him from the hospital back home.
Jimmy Carter is, you know, his legacy is really being put out there now while he is, you know, still alive. And of course, he entered hospice and chose not to have any more medical treatment. Carter, you know, is more popular now, obviously, than when he was, you know, president of the United States and had lost his election by a landslide. And mainly the reason, of course, there was the issue of the Saudis who cut off the, you know, gasoline. But I think we can recognize mainly it was Iran, you know, the whole hostage crisis. He tried to do something that was a failed effort in the desert outside Tehran. And so I think that Iran was a big factor. But I have to tell you, as a person, even at that time, in 1976, you know, he may have been unpopular and he may have lost, but I think a lot of people recognize that he is just and was at that time and is now, you know, a fantastic person, fantastic human being. And after he left office, he stayed modest. I mean, he could have, you know, presidents give pretty high-paid speeches, and they accumulate a lot of wealth. We know they do that in most cases, but and I'm not criticizing them for going out and give speeches. That's their prerogative. But Carter remained dedicated to a lot of people. Still taught Sunday school. I was active with Habitat for Humanity, and I saw firsthand what he did in building home after home, using the power of his previous office to raise money to build homes for people. I mean, he's just one good, solid person, and I think a very kind person, and that has resonated through his life after he left. So he's, you know, very, very popular, more than when he was the president.
Yeah, he was the first president I really remember. I remember reading about Nixon and about Ford, you know, because I delivered newspapers then, but I didn't really understand what was going on. Carter was really the first president that I paid attention to. And, you know, I remember watching, you know, the malaise speech and, you know, I think back of that and I go, you know, that, you know, asking Americans to sacrifice, that's, I know it was a different era back then, but I imagine a politician saying, you know, put on a sweater, you know, suffer a little bit. I just can't imagine that.
Yeah. He formed the Ford or the Carter Ford Commission for federal elections after the Bush Gore election. And we based the Help America Vote, Sonny Hoyer and I did, based it off of the Carter Ford Commission. He was gracious enough to put his time into that. And we took their recommendations, the most of them, and put it into a piece of legislation. After it passed, they said he was going to call me, and he did. And it was kind of a surreal conversation, Rick, because he called and he said, "How are you?" And I said, "Fine." He said, "Congratulations. I think it's next to civil rights legislation in elections. This is one of the most important things that we could do." And I thanked him, you know, for his time and everything. And then he said something that was kind of, I mean, I met presidents and everything, but he said something that was just kind of, you know, so Jimmy Carter. And he said, "I understand Jerry's going to be calling you, Jerry Ford." He said, "Hey, tell Jerry I said hi. I owe him a call. Tell him I'll call him." And it was just such a down-to-earth type of guy. So, good guy.
Yeah, using you as his bag man.
He was something.
Yeah, he still is. Legacy. I mean, he hasn't gone yet, but I'm preparing myself because, you know, it's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sad. But Bob, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Rick.
Seriously, I mean, I think back to that speech and, you know, I think back to his administration. A lot of things I would have liked to have seen differently. But I think, you know, Bob's right. You know, I think it was Iran that, you know, I remember as a kid, you know, the kids in the playground, you know, all hopped up ready to go to war with Iran and me going, "No, I don't think that's a great idea. Don't think it's such a good idea," because, you know, it was just a couple years earlier that I remember, you know, the people that came home from Vietnam being dumped into our housing project. And the fact that, you know, you had this president trying to keep us out of that. And I do remember when Operation Eagle Claw failed. And there's a lot of conspiracy around, you know, why that failed. But, you know, he tried to send, you know, people in to rescue the hostages. And it failed, and that, I think, was the end of his ability to win in 1980. Again, there's a ton of potential conspiracy around that, but ultimately the country made a decision. They made a decision to go away from the guy who wanted to put solar panels on people's homes to the guy who told you, "No, you don't have to sacrifice. You don't have to put on a sweater and worry about the thermostat. We're going to oil," and, you know, made an agreement with the Saudis. And it's interesting how all of this stuff kind of plays and just keeps repeating itself. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Let's take a quick break. Right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1917. More than 400 Jewish mothers, many carrying their children, marched on City Hall in New York City. Their cry, which rang out in both Yiddish and English, was, "We want food for our children." On the eve of the U.S. entry into World War I, inflation had sent the cost of food skyrocketing. For example, in 1916, the cost for an average dinner for a medium-sized family was 76 cents. By 1917, the price had more than doubled to $1.99. At a time when families were fortunate to have an income of $40 a month, seeing grocery bills jump from $22 to $59 for the month was more than most families could bear. Working parents could not afford to feed their children. Many were forced to sell family heirlooms and pawn what possessions they had just to survive. The Mothers Anti-High Price League, a socialist-led organization, organized a march in protest of the inflated prices. In the days that followed, boycotts, sometimes violently enforced, targeted food shops accused of price gouging. Some women also attacked customers who visited the boycotted shops. Unfounded rumors swirled that the protests were a German plot. The anti-German hysteria leading up to World War I put the city on edge. By February 24th, thousands of women from all five boroughs gathered in Madison Square to protest the high food prices. At the front of the march waved a white flag emblazoned with the single word, starvation. City officials responded by providing cheap food for purchase throughout the city. This provided temporary relief, but did not address the impact of high inflation on food costs. Adequately feeding our nation's children is a problem the U.S. still has not solved. According to a study done in 2012, 1 in 7 households, or more than 17 million people in the United States, faced food insecurity. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. I think about that election in 1980, that being an enormous one, and the first one that I ever really, really paid attention to. I spent time, in the late 70s, doing kind of, kid work on campaigns, for when Kucinich was running for mayor of Cleveland. I remember, handing out, flyers for him. I didn't know why. I just remember he was in the newspaper. He was mayor and, handing out flyers. But Carter's campaign was that 1980 campaign was the first one I really paid attention to. And it was one of those moments where you go, it was a crossroads moment. And I see us very much, a couple of times since being in those moments where the choice you make, which way will you go? And, Carter was talking about moving us on a path of sustainability and, green energy and that, and, Reagan was, no, we don't need to do any of that. And, ripped the solar panels off the White House and made sure that we're still to this day hooked on oil and fossil fuels. Whereas in that moment we could have changed. Now, they were both similar on the neoliberal stuff that I think Biden is changing. And looking back at Carter's presidency, I do have a problem with massive deregulation. The reason the Teamsters didn't endorse Carter in 1980 and did endorse Reagan is because Carter signed trucking deregulation, which just destroyed the trucking industry and the airline industry. But again, I go back to why. Why did they do this? They did it because of the energy costs. They did it because they thought they could streamline things. It would cut down on energy costs and prices and help consumer prices. They thought they were, again, the intention being we're helping people. We're helping poor people, get through the crisis. We're making things, They did it for right, wrong, or indifferent. They're doing it because they thought it was going to help people. Whereas Republicans knew why they were doing it. It's going to help corporate America. It's going to help destroy those labor unions. It's going to help put workers in their place. Same thing with the airlines. Look what deregulation did to the airlines. Look at what's done to the trucking industry. Look at what deregulation has done across the board. It's created billionaires and multimillionaires, and it has done that. It has worked exactly as it was supposed to, but it's crushed working people. And what they've done masterfully, and you got to give them credit. They've convinced the working class of this country to think in terms of they're the boss, this Stockholm syndrome for working people, that they're going to someday be that sitting in that shiny city on the hill, looking down on those poor people. So they'll forgive a lot of these horrible things because they think someday it's going to be them. And the reality is it never is, which is why I think we.
Chris Domine is a husband and a father. Chris is an athlete. Chris is even an Iron Man. But 10 years ago, Chris was facing a very different story because his kidneys were failing.
Basically, the doctor said, if you don't get a kidney transplant and if you don't do dialysis, you are going to die.
Fortunately, Chris received a second chance at life, made possible by an organ donor.
You know, your well-being changes from loss of hope to better times ahead.
More than 100 million people in America are registered organ, eye, and tissue donors. People of every age and ethnicity, because they believe it's the right thing to do. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life. Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5.